Tim Schultz, and this is From Theory to Practice. Welcome to the show today. Welcome to the broadcast. Welcome to the Monday edition of what it is that we are trying to do, man. Welcome to the most important earnings week edition of our lifetimes of what it is that we are trying to do. So welcome to the show. I'm glad that you are here. If you're watching over on the Tasty Live Network, then I would actually bounce on over to YouTube. I'd bounce over to YouTube because you can join the conversation. You can join the discussion in real time. You control my trades in real time. You can communicate with your brethren that are also watching the show. It is a good time had by most. So let's pop in. Let's have a little look-see at what's going on in the old stock market as she gets ready for liftoff. In this week, the most important week in the history of Amazon earnings, Apple earnings, and FOMC earnings, all coming on down the chutes later this week. So immediate S&Ps up 14, a little muted. Risk-free asset, also known as the NASDAQ futures, extremely high-risk instrument, up 53. Got the boomers up 128. Then you have the Russell 2000 futures index up 16. On the day, you've got bonds up a little bit, you've got gold up a little bit, you got volatility down a little bit. You kind of got a little bit of a strong market, a little bit of strength in the indexes here today, but it feels very much like it's wait and see. Like it feels very much like, all right, let's wait and see about Amazon. Let's wait and see about Uncle Jay. Let's wait and see about Apple. So that's all coming on down the chutes here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So we are going to be preparing the portfolio today for those monumental events, the most important events of our trading careers, all coming down the chutes, back to back to back, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So there's some overall market commentary. That's probably not going to do much for you, but it's already done and over with, so we can't go back. So if you have any questions for me, then I would drop them in the chat box. The earlier that you get them in the chat box, the greater the likelihood, the higher the delta that I will get to that question, because again, the expected move on the number of questions I get to per show is somewhere between 0.8 and 1.1. And so let's go ahead and let's prepare the portfolio for what's coming on down the chutes. Now, we don't have too much happening in the portfolio. It feels a little, it feels a little vacant. It feels a little sparse maybe with the number of positions that we have on in the portfolio. It feels like we're missing futures option strategies. We're missing other strategies, like we're missing all kinds of stuff happening here in the portfolio. So just going down the portfolio, kind of surveying the landscape and combing the streets that are or is the six positions that are in the portfolio. So we have MES, we have MNQ, we have Netflix, Reddit, Uber, and then UNG. So we're going to talk about these guys one by one, and then I think we're going to do a brand new trade. I don't want to do too many trades today because, again, I want to leave capital dry. I want to keep the powder kind of at the ready for Amazon, Uncle Jay, and then Apple. But I do have my eyes on getting back into a little MCL. She's a little slippery from time to time, but I kind of like what I saw earlier in preparing for the show. So we'll take a look at that here in just a couple of minutes. But looking at what we have in front of us. So first and foremost, MES. So actually, let me open up MES and MNQ. Since these are, they're sort of a pair. They're sort of kind of like your tuna fish and applesauce, your peanut butter and oatmeal. So you've got MES, our strangle strikes are 50-10 on the put side and 54-40 on the call side. And you have the index at 5,145. So 51-45. So obviously it is nicely centered between the two short strikes. Like, we are in a very good spot right now. You know, we obviously got tested a little bit on the downside with kind of the Middle Eastern tensions and the missiles being fired from here, missiles being fired from there, which has apparently quieted down for the time being, which is good for us, and it's good for this position. It's good for the market writ large, of course, for not to be super, super chaotic. But here, MES, 51.45. The strikes are 50.10 and 54.40. And that's pretty good. I mean, we could use it up a little bit, I guess. Maybe just a titch higher would be good. But right here is pretty solid. I mean, when you look at the distance that we have between, both strikes, you've got 51.45 down to 50.10. That's 135 points. You've got 51.45 up to 54.40. That's 300 points. Like, we have a ton of room on the upside, as evidenced by the fact that our call option is not really worth anything anymore. And this position, guys, it couldn't really be in a better spot. So what are we going to do? I actually think, believe it or not, I think we're going to take this trade off. So we are not at our profit target yet, because typically I like to go for, you know, right at about that 50% marker on my short strangle. So we sold this trade for 60 points. Remember, we're dealing with futures options, so you have to, you know, kind of weave in the multiplier there. It's not $50 or $60 or even 60 cents. It's 60 points. And with MES, it's $5 per point. So it's $300 in total. So we sold this guy for 60 points. It's currently marking at 37 and a half points. So obviously, 60 divided by 2 or 60 multiplied by 50% will get you to the same destination. That's going to be 30. I'd be looking to take this thing off if it was marking for 30. Well, I'm no Julius Pina, but 30 does not equal 37.50. So these are not the same thing. So why am I taking the trade off? Well, I think it's really just a little bit of market awareness. I think it's really just, all right, this is a pretty good trade. We have not taken any heat on the trade. We still have our MNQ position open. I plan to keep that open for at least the next couple of days unless something crazy happens one way or another. So thinking about these two positions, you know, you've got the S&P 500 index, you've got the NASDAQ index. They're obviously not the same, but they're going to overlap quite a bit. They are going to be highly, highly, highly correlated most of the time. And so looking out at what's coming on down the chutes in the next, you know, day or two, it's like, man, we've got Amazon tomorrow after the bell. I mean, it's going to be absolutely bonkers tomorrow after the bell. I think Amazon almost always leads to some very, very, very significant moves in the overall market, whether it be the NASDAQ index, whether it be the S&P 500 index, and then, of course, Amazon itself. And so thinking about this, I'm like, well, let's take off even the S&Ps. Let's take off the MES strangle to kind of book that winner. We'll kind of lessen our risk because, again, you've got Amazon, you've got Uncle Jay, you've got Apple, and I don't really want to go through all three of those with one trade that is looking really, really good. I mean, MNQ is still a loser. So I kind of want to leave that trade on. That's kind of the general way that we like to do things here inside of the Tasty Bubble. We manage our winners and we give our losers duration. And so I am going to, speaking of that, MNQ's at 18 days to go. How did that happen? Wow, really? That's crazy. All right, so we'll tend to that here in a second too. But I'm going to go ahead and take off MES. And those are the 4.5 reasons why I'm going to take off MES. I feel pretty good about it. In terms of market awareness, in terms of risk reduction, in terms of just controlling kind of unit risk going into these binary events. I mean, essentially, Amazon, FOMC, and Apple are all three macro-level binary events, in my opinion. Obviously, Amazon is an individual company. It's an earnings announcement. It's not, you know, technically a macro event, but guys, it's a macro event. So Amazon, macro event. FOMC, obviously a macro event. It gets no more macro than the FOMC meeting. And then, of course, Apple, the whole market is hinging on Apple's earnings. It always is, every 3 months, every quarter. And so Apple, another macro event. And so I don't know if the Ilya Spivaks in the world would agree with my analysis, but nevertheless, we're going to roll with it. So taking off MES to 37.50, we might get filled there. I mean, the liquidity in MES is not too bad. All right, so no takers at 37.50. Let me just go up. Just try to add a, let's just add a skosh to it. 37.75. That should do it. All right. So fill that 37.75. Okay. So MES is over and done with. All right. So I feel much, much better about the unit risk going into, you know, macro event, macro event, macro event. All right. So now what I want to do with MNQ, I actually didn't know that it was at 18 days. That was not on my radar as I was getting ready for the show. So I'm glad I saw it now because, man, let's go ahead and let's kick this thing out to the next cycle. Now, maybe we'll even get a little fancy and move that call option a little further away from the action. But let's just wait and see what we can get for just rolling this thing out to the next cycle. Same strikes, you know, just really nothing changed in terms of the current strategy that we have on. Although I will say this. This is the reason why. So let me actually bring up, there's no Alice in Chains on the futures options. Oh, it's brutal. It's brutal. It's kind of like when you're in your playlist, right? When you're inside Spotify, you're like, man, I could really use some Rooster right now, right? And then Carly Rae Jepsen comes on, you're like, ah, got me again. Like, man, I could really use some Man in the Box. And then they drop a Taylor Swift on you, like, that's brutal. Like, that's absolutely brutal. I mean, Taylor Swift's amazing. Carly Rae Jepsen, I mean, she's top three, no doubt. But man, the Chains are just, when you need the Chains, you need the Chains. I mean, that's just the way it is, but man. All right, so let's go into MNQ. Let's go into the... It's going to take me like an extra two, maybe three clicks. I mean, man, how did they do it, 18 months ago? I don't even know. But if we go into MNQ, so this is the trade that we, this is the trade package that we're working with. So you can see we did the original strangle back on April 1st. So it hasn't even been a month, man. It feels like we've had this trade on for so much longer than that because there have been so much discussion and so many learnings along the way. I hope you guys feel the same way. I just think we've been able to really kind of learn so much and explore so much with these futures options. It's been quite an adventure. And so we did this on April 1st for, let's see here. We did the strangle for 235. And then it looks like, did I break up the rules? What did I do here? So I rolled the put. Let's see here. May 17th. Huh. So there's the original strangle. And then this looks like it's April. And no, that doesn't make any sense. Oh, May and then April. No, there's no way. This must have all been May. There's no way I had April options in there. Got a mistake in the activity tab? Got Anton back there sleeping on the job? Man, it could be. It absolutely could be. All right, so we're going to be flying blind a little bit. This is why you got to have the chains. You just got to have the chains. Again, 8 times out of 10, Carly Rae is going to get you where you're trying to go. But man, those 2 out of 10, you got to get the grind, dude. You got to get the grind spinning on the old disc there. But anyway, all right, so 235, and then we did the adjustment for, so it looks like I picked up, I don't know, I'm just eyeballing this because I'm a little thrown off by this over here. I mean, maybe I'm going crazy. Maybe we need to cross-reference this with the follow tab. I'm not sure, but I don't think we were in May, and then we were in April. And then we were in May. And so that's why I'm a little bit thrown off by, this kind of deal right here. And so anyway, it looks like we're working with, somewhere around 300 points in total credit, give or take. Because we rolled the call down. I would expect there to be, some type of credit collected on that. So we've got around 300 points. Okay, we're not going to need to be exact. I think this is going to be good enough for our purposes. So if I open up MNQ... So we're down, if my trade price, my trade price is not 213. So if I've got about $300, I'm about even on the trade then, it looks like. The mark price is about 320. And by about 320, I mean the mark price is exactly 320. I've collected about 300 on the trade. So we're about even, right? This trade price is not going to be accurate because it's not going to reflect all of the trades we made. Now, if I group by, if you try to group by order chains, it's not going to help you. It's not going to help you up there because... there are no order chains for the futures options. So I tried to just beat the system there. I don't know if you guys saw what I did, but I tried to change this group by. It's normally grouped by symbol. That's kind of your default setting. If you group by order chains, like right there, then on the positions tab, it just shows you the Allison chains. Now, you could do that. I could do that. Would it save us time? Would it be more efficient? Of course. Am I going to do it? Absolutely not. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep going in to the Allison chains because it's fun. Because it's fun. And I'm just going to keep fighting against it. But anyway, symbol. So I kind of thought if we group by order chains, maybe we could just kind of muster up some order chains for the futures options, but we can't. There's nothing we can do. So anyway, we're about even on the trade, give or take. So let me go ahead and if I roll this out to, let's go to like the June 21st weekly. That's fine. So if I roll this thing out to the June 21st weekly, it looks like... oh, the options on the June 21st weekly aren't looking too great. So I think this is Bat's job. I think these are Bat's options. He's making markets in these options. So that would explain why the bid-ask spread differential is so much against you. It's so much in his favor, and it's hurting you, right? These are Tony Batista markets, ladies and gentlemen, right? $4 bid, $450 offer. Like, how do you think my man made his money? Like, I know he was selling jeans out of his trunk, in the evenings and stuff just to get by, but look at these markets. These are some Tony Batista markets right here. So anyway, let's clear this away. And I don't know what's going on today. So let's go ahead and hold on a second. Now I'm like, I got to figure this out. So I'm in May 17th with 18 days to go. If I go to, let's just say, so June 21. Oh, okay. I think I was rolling to the PM markets. Yeah, they wanted to roll me to the PM markets in June 21. This is going to be expiration day. So the futures options expire in the morning when the futures themselves expire. This is part of triple witching. This is one of the individual components of triple witching. And so I want to go into the AM options. And so there you go. That looks like a breath of fresh air. Now, these are some Tom Sosnoff markets right here. He's there for the little guy, right? As every good elitist is, like, he is there for you. He is there for me. He just wants what's best for us so we can do all his work for him, basically. And so when you look, when you look at this market, this is looking a lot better. So let me go ahead and let's delete that circle. Let's go ahead and let's see if I go in and roll expirations. Yeah, I don't want to do. Hold on a second. Yeah, it's making me roll to. It's making me roll to the PM option, I think. Can I change that? Hold on a second. This is interesting because normally, you know, normally we're dealing with equity options, right? And so we don't have to worry about AM and PM expirations like we do in the futures world. But right here, we kind of do because obviously you have, yeah, I can't. It's making me go to the PMs, which I don't want to do. So, all right, so let's go ahead and let's do this a different way then. So what I'm going to do is I mean, man, we're using activity tabs. Like we're just like, we're going to be clicking like single legs of the order. Like this is basically, you know, 2014 all over again. So let's go ahead. Let's minimize June and minimize the other June and minimize that May. Let's minimize everything. So I'm going to go into May. This is the cycle that I'm currently in. I'm going to buy the 17.4 put. I'm just going to buy that guy. I'm just going to do these guys individually. I'm going to buy the 17.4 put. I'm going to close that up. Let me go to the June 21st AM. Sell the 17.4. I'm going to get a $168 credit for the put roll. Now, that's assuming we get filled there. I mean, the MNQ options markets, as we've learned before, are quite craptacular. So I don't think I'm going to get filled there. But we're going to give it a shot. And so let's do this. And then I want to examine the call side to see what we can or, and maybe should do on that side in terms of maybe moving around the strike and all of that kind of stuff. So let me just go into 164. Just so maybe I can get filled. They rejected it. What? Hold on a second. Why are my orders being rejected now? Man, this is a custom spread. It won't let me do it. Custom spread not supported. What? It's crazy. All right. Okay. So let's go ahead. Now, I mean, we are doing this like, I mean, it's like now it's like 2011. Right now we are all the way. I mean, this is like 14 years ago. So I'm going to buy. So I'm going to buy the 17.4. I tried to roll into the AM. I couldn't do it. It wouldn't find it on the rolls. And so, you know, futures options, we're learning together. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to buy the 17.4. Let me just buy this guy. I mean, man, this is just like, this is something, man. So we close the 17.4. We close the 17.4. It's going to be harder to figure out what the roll credits are. But I know that if I do this, let's see here. If I know that if I leave my legs the same. All right, so we got filled at 126. So let me go into the June 21st AM options. I'm going to sell the 17.4. I don't want to change the strike on that. That much I do know. It's the call option that I'm not sure about. All right, so we got filled. So we just kind of, you know, brute force style moved our MNQ option out from the May cycle to the June AM cycle. Now I need to do the same thing with the call option. I don't want to have a calendarized strangle on. So the 18.1 call is marking at 194. I'm just going to look at that. I want to see what the 18.1 call is marking at in the June cycle. June AM cycle. 18.1? Is that right? 18.1 is 194. Okay. So now I go into the June cycle. 18.1. Wow. 18.1 is 382. So I'm going to get almost another 200 points for rolling this thing out, which makes sense because, you know, NQ is obviously a mover and a shaker. It makes sense that I'm going to be so compensated, so well compensated for this roll. But here's what's cool. I could roll this guy all the way up if I want to the 18.5. And basically do that for about even money, maybe a tiny little credit, and then just bank on the huge credit that I collected on the put side and then kind of recenter the strikes a little bit. I feel a little bit better about that because we're adding so much time to the trade. I kind of want to leave myself a little bit of room on both sides. I mean, I don't mind being a little bit bearish here just given the run-up in the market as of late, But I kind of like having a little bit more breathing room on both sides. So let's go ahead and let's see here. So what I'm going to do, again, bear with me. We are in 2011. We are in like early 2011. It might even be late 2010. If I buy the 18-1, and if you guys are listening to the show today, man, I can't help you. Like, for my audio-only audience, you guys know I love you guys, and you guys know that I do all I can to help you. I got nothing for you today. You're going to have to watch the show in the archives later because this has been an absolute dumpster fire from basically the very beginning, trying to figure out how to do all this. And a lot of it is my inexperience with futures options. Some inexperience, some Anton falling asleep at the wheel behind the scenes with the platform. So those two things together, not a good combination. But if I buy back by 18-1, let's see, if I buy this thing back for, I don't know, 195 maybe? I'm just going in like way over the mid price so that I get filled. All right, so I'm filled at 195. Now I go to June 21 a.m. I'm going to go all the way up to the 18.5. And it looks like I can sell that guy for, I don't know what, 216.50 maybe? 216.75? All right, so we sold that for 216.75. Beautiful. So we got about, what, 20 bucks on that side too? So we did that in pieces. We had to do it in pieces. That was kind of our only option. But now we are all the way out to MNQ. MNQ strangle. We're in June, 53 days to go. We're now like perfectly centered between the strikes. Don't ask me to figure out the basis because I'm not going to be able to do it. But I feel good. I feel good about where we're at. Maybe we'll just hold them and let them expire worthless, and we won't have to figure out any of that stuff. We can just know that we will have made some money if they both expire worthless. Okay, so that's MNQ. Man, that took a really long time, way longer than I thought. So Netflix, Reddit, Uber. Uber, we're just printing cash in Uber. We'll have to take a look at that maybe tomorrow. But I want to get to y'all's questions. I'm not even going to do MCL because I really want to get to you guys because I see you guys are in the chat, and I want to spend most of the rest of the time, if not all of the rest of the time, on you guys. And let's just see where you guys are. And if we have time to do MCL, then we'll do MCL. So let's see. So Jesse Seymour is in the house. What's going on there, Jesse? Good afternoon to everyone. What's up, my man? I appreciate you, my friend. He says, good afternoon, Dr. Jim. I hope you feel better before the weekend was over. Yes, definitely recovered quite a bit. We're back. We're ready to go. I'm ready. Got my gloves on. Got my ears pricked. I'm ready, man. Got Amazon. We got FOMC. We got Apple. It's gonna be quite the trifecta, indeed. So good afternoon to all. Says Paul, what's going on there, Paul? I appreciate you too, my friend. Thank you for being here. You are always part of the show, and it's just man, it wouldn't feel right if you weren't in. If you were not here, it just wouldn't feel right if you didn't drop in the comment stream to wish us all a good afternoon. So thank you, Paul. Thank you so much for being here. And of course, if I can ever help in any way, man, just let me know. It is absolutely unequivocally my pleasure to do so. So Omid's in the house. What's going on there, Omid? Hey, Dr. Jim, what are your thoughts on an iron condor? One DTE SPX. You know, I don't, I mean, if you've been following the show, then you know that I don't love iron condors. It's not my favorite. And by not my favorite, I mean, it's absolutely my least favorite. That being said, I also don't do a lot of zero DTE and one DTE stuff in SPX. I have done it, and I probably will do a one DTE SPX trade tomorrow for FOMC on Wednesday. But rather than do an iron condor, I personally like to do butterflies. I like to do expected move butterflies. I like to kind of, you know, take some kind of directional stance and kind of position myself to benefit from some directional move in the market. Now, I'm almost always wrong when it comes to that directional move. So maybe I should do more iron condors. Like maybe I should, you know, go ahead and try to tap into what the iron condor can offer you. I mean, one of the reasons why I don't love iron condors is the simple fact that because you have so much friction on the trade on both sides, it can be very difficult to make money on an iron condor when you're going out 40, 45, 50 days to go. That's just the truth. That is just the truth. And you don't have a lot of adjustment opportunities available to you like you do with something that's naked, like a strangle, like a put, like a ratio spread, whatever. And so that's the main reason why I don't love iron condors. Now, because you're choosing an iron condor that only has, you know, one day to go or 0 days to go or whatever, it's like, man, you're so much further down the road in terms of, you know, time decay. Maybe it's attractive again. Maybe it's appealing now. Like, I don't know. There, Omid, I'll have to think about this. I'm going to have to think about this. Maybe we'll weave this in for FOMC on Wednesday. So that would be something I'll look at tomorrow. So come back tomorrow. I'll probably either do a butterfly or maybe I'll try an iron condor and we'll kind of give that a go and see what happens. But I appreciate you there, Omid. I appreciate you very much. So Dave S. is in the house. What's going on there, Dave S.? Hey, Dr. Jim, what's the difference between SPX and ESM4. Yes. So the only difference is SPX is the spot price. That's the spot price of the S&P 500. So this is the cash index. This is the current value of the S&P 500. That's SPX. But when you go to ES, these are your futures markets. So ES expires in June. So you can see you've got the June expiration right there. ES is slightly higher than SPX, which is, you know, most people would say is simply reflecting, you know, the positive drift in the marketplace. Like, you typically do see the futures market be, in terms of equities, slightly higher than the spot price of equities. This would be a market that's said to be in contango when the futures are higher than the spot price. So this is typically what happens in, you know, equity prices. And so it's not always the case for every market. You have to look at that market specifically. Like, are you talking about volatility? Are you talking about oil? Are you talking about gold? Are you talking about equities? They all have their own unique characteristics that kind of dictate whether or not they're usually in contango, whether or not they're usually in backwardation. And so when it comes to equities, though, it's very common to see the futures contract that's leading the spot price. So in this case, ESM4 is June, so just a couple months. And then SPX is today. You would expect to see the futures be slightly higher than the spot price, which, again, the simplest way to explain that without, you know, getting our hands dirty and rolling up our sleeves into the underlying mathematics is simply the positive drift in the marketplace, you know, and the fact that, you know, the index pays dividends and things like that. And so, yeah, that's the basic answer to that, though, Dave S. I appreciate you, my friend. Hopefully that that helps you a little bit. So Boston Frank's in the house. Oh, here we go. Boston Frank says the market is it, not she. It is a neutral gender. I think you were going for. Okay, sure. I'm fine with that. She felt very natural to me. So it could be a she, it could be he, could be an it. It could be essentially whatever you need it to be. It's kind of similar to when you have a baby, right? Like, do you refer to the baby as it? I mean, I certainly did. And man, I caught a whooping for referring to my children as it. I'm like, well, it's a baby. Right. And not only that, but with Penelope, we didn't even know. Like, we kept it a secret. We kept it an absolute secret. And here's a funny little story. So when we had Penelope, I'll keep this short, I promise. 6 minutes, no more than 6.5 minutes. When we had Penelope, we it was our first child and we're like very excited and all the normal things that first time parents go through, right? Well, we're going through the names for and we didn't know. Like, I wanted to keep it a surprise. Autumn really kind of wanted to know, but I was like, listen, like, I'm running this house. We are not going to know. And she said, okay. So there you go. That's the only thing I run, by the way, for the record. So we're having Penelope and didn't know it was Penelope. Had no idea who it was going to be. And so we felt very good about the girl's name. We had it, Penelope. We knew it like months in advance. And we were very excited about the girl's name. But we were so, so, so unsure about the boy's name. And so, you know, I have a son now. His name's Elijah. And so it wasn't our front-running name at the time was not Elijah, though. Like, we haven't been sitting on Elijah for like years, and then we had Eli, and we named him Elijah. No, the number one boy's name at the time was actually Solomon. So if Penelope would have been a boy, we would have almost certainly named him Solomon. And so I would have had a son named Solomon, which would have been really interesting, just because I wanted to call him Solo. I'm like, I just want to call him Solo. I mean, I love the biblical roots of his full formal name, but I just want to have a son that I call Solo. So I don't even have that now. I have Eli, which is amazing. I wouldn't change that for anything. But yeah, anyway, that story is absolutely not going to help you at all. So yes. Okay. Market is neutral. Got it. Crusader Trader. I kind of prefer the market as a she. There we go. I like this. Here we go. A little back and forth. The analogy works for a few reasons that I won't go into. I appreciate you. We all appreciate you. And so, yes, I appreciate you, Crusader Trader. Thank you for saving us all. Alex Swanson, that was a put spread in April. What was a put spread in April? Oh, wait, no, was it? You're talking about MNQ. But that's the thing, though. Did I do an MNQ put spread? Oh, you know what? Thank you, Alex. Thank you, my friend. Oh, Alex is 100% right. So let's go back in here. Now I remember. It's all coming back to me now. Celine Dion style. I got it. So if we go into, yes. So these April trades, That was what I was doing as part of our teachable moment package, a package of teachable moments where I was trying to figure out the sizing differences between futures options and like equity options, where we were comparing, you know, QQQ with MNQ, and I wanted to do a spread to kind of isolate the short delta, or I'm sorry, the short option beta weighted delta, and then compare it to QQQ. That's what it was. So this wasn't all part of the same thing. That would have been obviously quite weird. It's very much different things. And so, excuse me. Okay, very interesting. Thank you very much there, Alex. And so, yes, I was correct in that. Yeah, we picked up about $82. And so now I can figure this out really quickly. It's 235 plus 82 approximately. So my basis on the MNQ trade right now is, what is that? 317 about. So we're at about 317. And if I'm not mistaken, it was currently marking at about 320 before we made those rolls. And so we're at about a scratch. So I decided to keep market selling off a little bit here. NASDAQ almost unched. Even S&P is almost unched. That's some pretty crazy stuff. And so we're about even on the MNQ trade, but we're going to keep it on for just a wee bit longer. So Bob King's in the house. What's going on there, Bob King? I'm sure I'm looking at this wrong, but I sold to open a put vertical in 6J in June. Man, I don't trade 6J, so I'm not probably going to be able to help you there, Bob King, but let's see what else you got. At 00635, 00062 for a $1,000 credit. The yen is rising, but my trade is sinking. What did I do wrong? Your thoughts, please. Oh, Bob, man. So what you need to do, you need to email Chris Vecchio, because I haven't traded the yen. I haven't looked at like a euro, like exchange rate, like cross rates and all those kinds of things. And I know that it can be very, very confusing. So I would rather not answer this than lead you astray, like lead you to think that it's something that it's not. I would shoot Chris Vecchio an email. If you don't have his email, then email me. I'm just jschultz@tastylive.com. Shoot me an email and I will forward it over to him, and he'll get back to you probably today with kind of some help there and some kind of solution there for understanding what's going on. So do that now though, Bob King. I'll look at it right after the show and we'll get you squared away. And so Absolute Beginner says, call the trade desk. Talking about me calling the trade desk. Yes, like it really is 2010. Calling the trade desk because you're having a problem. That's like 1997 stuff. And so yeah, that's some definitely not gonna be doing that. So Absolute Beginner says, audio sounds fine on my end. That's good. That's good. That's really good to hear. And so let's see. We apparently had some lags and some audio issues, but maybe it's good to go now. Let's see. Finn West in the house. Good morning, Dr. J. What's going on there, Finn West? I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you for being here. Thank you very much for being here. As always, my friend, you are very, very, very much appreciated. And so let's see. Absolute Beginner says, the platform demos are on the Tasty Trade YouTube page. Yes, there are a lot of platform demos. Some really, really good stuff. If they have any on futures options, you guys need to let me know. You guys need to be dropping them in the chat box and emailing them to me directly so that I can check those guys out and they can make us all better. That would be really, really good. So let's see. Here we go. Cryset. Thanks for watching there, Cryset. I appreciate you. Cryset says, lately I've decided to stop having over 20 strategies on at any given moment. How can I limit myself to having such a small amount when I see good deals? Yeah, it's hard. Chrysack goes on to say, also, I placed a bullish expected move butterfly in Google, but sadly it went above my strikes. Yeah, I think expected move means nothing when the stock is was all-time highs. Yeah, that's a fair point. You know, so a couple of things, right? And I'll give you a few things to think about relative to what you're kind of asking about and what you kind of had in there. So number one, you know, butterflies, like what you did with the Google trade, I love them. They're great trades. I do them often on the show. We light plenty of stacks of cash on fire when it comes to butterfly strategies. So you're in good company. But when it comes to butterflies specifically and especially, the thing about a butterfly that makes it really tricky is not only do you have to get the direction correct, but you have to get the magnitude correct too, which is hard to do, as you've seen, right? It's like Google just blew it off, you know, blew the doors off the hinges to the upside. And it's like, man, that's really, really difficult to contend with, because it's like I got the directional move right, but it was too good. It was too strong. Like it kind of blew away my strikes. And so, you know, one of the ways to combat that, there's only so much we can do. Like that's just one of the gotchas that's built into the strategy. But one of the ways to combat that is to widen out your strikes, is to go as wide as you possibly can in terms of, you know, being comfortable with the debit that you're paying, because it just gives you a wider and wider and wider net. And so, you know, that's one thing that you can do. Another thing you can do is you can obviously place your short strike above, you know, the outside of the expected move on the top side, or, you know, below the outside of the expected move on the bottom side if you're playing it to the downside. Of course, the trade-off there is if it doesn't overshoot the mark and it kind of comes inside the mark, then you end up, you know, not in as good of a spot as you could have been if you just would have stuck with kind of your standard Betty Crocker butterfly, putting it right at the edge of the expected move. And so, you know, for every gimme, there's a gotcha, right? Unfortunately, there is no gotcha-less strategy. There is no gotcha-proof strategy out there. You just have to figure out what you personally like. You have to figure out, you know, what your sizing parameters look like and what your directional bias is and how you want to play that. And then just choose a pathway forward through the forest that seems reasonable. And butterflies, you know, for my money, in my opinion, do seem pretty reasonable. But then the other thing you were saying, decide to stop having over 20 strategies on any given moment. I actually think that's a very, very good move. I think, you know, I think very few traders can handle that many trades and strategies. I know we're all looking at Tom. I know we're all watching, you know, Tom just lead us, you know, straight into the dumpster, right? Just over and over and over again. But we keep coming back. Like, it's our own fault at this point. And he's got 50, 80, 100, 300 strategies on, whatever. And it's like, he doesn't even know what's going on. Don't let him fool. He has no idea what's going on. Tony knows what's going on. Tony tells Tom what's going on. Tom has no idea what's going on. I can assure you of that. And so when it comes to our number of strategies, all kidding aside, you have to find a number that you feel comfortable with. I think for most people, it's going to be somewhere between, I would say, 8 to 10 on the low end and maybe 20 to 30 on the high end. Somewhere in that range where a lot of traders tend to cluster between 12 and like 18. And so I would absolutely just encourage you, Chris, that you just got to slow things down. You just got to take a cue from Kevin Costner, for the love of the game, who I know watches the show, and just clear the mechanism. Just clear the mechanism and slow things down. And then just, you know, just pick the best of the best. Just pick the best of the best. And so that's the way that I would handle that. But I understand where you're coming from. I understand the issue. And so Dave S. goes on to say, Dr. Jim, do you like SPX or ES better to trade? Definitely ES. Absolutely. I don't have a great reason why that's the case, but I haven't really traded SPX too much. I'll do butterflies and stuff like that in SPX from time to time because I think the options markets might be more liquid than ES. Maybe ES options are still pretty liquid. Yeah, definitely ES over SPX. And so let's see. Wowbib says, Doctor, it's tasty trade. Give a recipe for cooking. All right, I've already given it to you multiple times. I've given you two recipes today, actually. Tuna fish and applesauce and peanut butter and oatmeal. Not necessarily together in the same meal. They can be used as substitutes for one another. So there you go. There's one. There's two. You're all set there, Wowbib. So Delta OP says SPY mini rip. Yes, it was a mini rip and now a little mini crash, I guess, although the NASDAQ is back to being up 25. And so the market's moving around. Was there like a bond auction or something? There's usually something at 2 o'clock these days. There's like a QRA announcement or like, you know, some kind of reverse repo, you know, New Zealand durable goods print or whatever. And so I don't know what it was, but the market is catching a little bit of a bid now. And so let's see, Doug Gray's in the house. What's going on there, Doug Gray? Hey, Dr. Jim, with the IC, should we expect to close it at 25% or wait for 50%? Does low IV matter with expectation of profit? It's a great question. It's an excellent question. So I would still go for 50% of max profit, even though it's going to be slow. It's going to be slower than you think it's going to be. In fact, the slowness is probably going to surprise you with iron condors. And that's just what you're signing up for. Right now, I'm talking about a traditional run-of-the-mill iron condor, like $5 wide. When you start going 10, 15, 20, you're widening it out, so it's going to move faster, right? But you obviously have more risk involved in that, and it's going to feel a little bit more like undefined risk, which are not bad things. I think those are good things, but I'm just making you aware of what that's going to be like. When I reference an iron condor, I'm typically referring to more of a standard iron condor, like $5 wide. Don't go $1 wide. Don't go $2. Don't go $3. You're just throwing your money away, you know, even more effectively than I do when I light stacks of cash on fire or earnings to trades. I'd go $5 wide minimum. I'd still go for 50% of max profit. Now, does IV change the landscape? Of course. In terms of expectation of profit, yes. If you sell low IV, it's going to slow down the speed potentially even more because A, the markets are moving more slowly, and B, if there is IV expansion while you're in the trade, that's going to hurt you. That's going to slow things down even more and potentially even, you know, turn that trade into a losing trade. If, however, you wait to sell when IV is higher, now you you're more well positioned. I don't know if that works, but it's already out there. You're more well positioned for IV contraction. So if IV comes down, that's going to help speed up the process a little bit. So in that regard, it does kind of dictate the speed of the strategy, at least a little bit. And so let's see, Albert Lubin is in the house. Dr. Jim, I currently have a straddle in Intel at a $40 strike. It started as a strangle, but with the rough move downs, I had to go into the straddle, okay? Is it safe to close the call side? It only has 8 cents. You know, I mean, the research team has looked at this many, many times in terms of legging out of strategies, and they've showed that there really isn't much of a benefit to doing that. You know, that's what the studies have shown. That's what the research is, highlighting. You've only got 8 cents left in the call side. It's not doing you very much. If you want to leg out, I don't think it's going to hurt you. Like, I don't know if it's going to help you in the end, but I don't know if it's going to hurt you either. So I would give it some consideration. Take off the call side, take it off and just trade this thing as a standalone put. And then if it rallies back a little bit, then you could sell another call at another point, and get a better price for it. And so I don't think it's a terrible move at all. And so RC says, you the man, Dr. J. Man, I appreciate you, RC. I'm going to send you that cash we talked about. Are you putting that in the stream right at this very moment? And so Air Ray says, does anyone know Scott Sheridan email? I do not know his email. It's probably bigboyscottys@aol.com. That'd be my guess. Maybe like a bigboyscottys123@aol.com. And so I would try one of those two. And, you know, if you get through, then you're welcome. And so let's see. Chuck says, are there even 20 different strategies? Yeah, I'm not sure. I assumed him to mean 20 different positions. And so let's see if I get to one more. Let's see. One more quick one. Here we go. This is it. Oh, man, you guys are too much. Tricet says, Dr. Jim is the funniest personality on Tasty. Changed my mind. Man, I appreciate you, Tricet. And then Absolute Beginner said, Tony, so he's blocked. But man, I appreciate you. I appreciate you, Tricet. Absolute Beginner saved himself because he said, Jim is great, though. Man, you guys are the best. You guys are the absolute best. I just appreciate you guys so much. And Tricet, I'm going to send you that cash that we talked about for you putting that in the stream to end the show today. Shooting with strength at the very end of the show. So thank you guys so much. If I can help you in any way, please email me. I'm all caught up on my emails, I believe. So if you email me now, now is a great time to email me because I'll probably be able to get back to you pretty quickly. I am jschultz@tastylive.com, or we can connect on Twitter. I'm @jschultzf3. I would love to hear from you guys over there as well. But stay tuned. We do have Jamal coming up next with Engineering the Trade. In the meantime, guys, trade them small, train them heavy, and stay optimistic. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.